save the black bear and save the bears in the forests, in the black forests of Central Europe. He did some awful, terrible things as well. But there's never any person in this world who's really, really bad. I'm still looking for some good things in Donald Trump. But I'm sure there's some there somewhere. I'm stigmatizing, aren't I? Yeah, I agree. Go on.
Thank you, Ajahn. The next question is, Ajahn Brahm, you said we learn from mistakes. What about those who are always repeating the same mistakes?
One of the things they're repeating them is because they're scared of them. They're not admitting them. You ask them, they say, no, I didn't do that. Or, no, that's not a problem. They're not acknowledging. When you acknowledge a fault, it brings it up. And once it's acknowledged, you're not afraid of it. You're not embarrassed by it. Then actually you can deal with it. Like how many people, they have sort of a swelling in their breast, women. You don't go see the doctor because you're afraid of what it might be. And sometimes, you know, some guys are afraid of going to see the doctor because there's something wrong with them. And so they just deny it. And of course, that's why they can't help. They can't be healed. Same with like psychological or ways of speaking. We say, oh, no, there's nothing wrong with me. Or like alcohol or gambling. No, it's just normal. It's not normal. There's something wrong with you. And so the only one you admit it, and not really wrong with you, but a wrong behavior, that once you admit it, of course, then healing is just so easy. So the one reason we people keep repeating mistakes, because basically they don't realize they're making the mistakes in the first place because they're afraid, they're in denial. That's my, that's what I've noticed over many years.
Thank you, Ajahn. Next question. When I don't get what I want, I usually decide that I don't want to play anymore. And this could be the game, business, or spouse. How can I act instead to get a better outcome?
So what you want, you don't want it anymore. That's life, isn't it? Because sometimes life promises you some things it can never deliver. So please understand what life can give you and live within those means. So if you do get married, for goodness sake, never think you're going to be happy ever after. Just go look at other people to be married. But it can give you a lot of happiness as well, a lot of satisfaction. Friendship, someone that is always going to be there for you, you know, if you can grow together properly. So never ask for life what it can't give you. So when you want something, understand what that can give you. And once you understand what it can give you, never get disappointed and frustrated. You always know, just if you marry a woman, you know, she's always going to have a headache sometimes. When it's a guy, he always wants to go off and watch his soccer or something with his friends. That's what guys are like. Do your research, first of all. Get on Google, Googling guys, and find out what they're like. Never think you have a defective model. They're all the same. If you buy a car, say you buy some Hyundai or something, you go on the internet and find out, you know, it's good qualities and it's faults. So if you go and get a woman, understand what she's like. You know, just do some research. And then you find what you're letting yourself in for if you get married. There's always some really positive, beautiful stuff. Always some difficulties as well. So you know what to expect. So you're never disappointed. And you never blame your partner for being defective. They're all like that. What was it this? I think it was one of the originals of the Buddhist Fellowship. She said when she got married here in Singapore, her father took her new husband aside and said, son-in-law, you probably think my daughter is absolutely perfect and wonderful. Yeah, she's charming, wonderful. Even the way she picks her nose is so delightful. So yeah, that's what it's like when you get married. You love everything about your partner. But he said to his new son-in-law, in a couple of years, maybe three, you will start to see the faults and defects in my daughter. After about 2 or 3 years, you start to see what's wrong with her. But always remember this, when you start to see her faults, always remember, if she never had those faults to begin with, she'd have married someone much better than you. So when you start to see the faults in your partner, remember, you've got faults as well. That's why you match.
So one should be grateful for one's partner's faults. Yeah. The next question is this. It's actually quite related to the previous one. Understanding the Dharma leads to enlightenment. Achieving enlightenment leads to neither anger or happiness or need of achievement. How then can we balance this with our daily lay lives where needs and drive is required?
Okay, first of all, when you become enlightened, you get no more anger or disappointments, but incredible happiness. So don't think that once you become enlightened, you're like a zombie or like a robot who never laughs at all. It's just the negative emotions are bad, they're not the positive ones. Like my master, Ajahn Chah, he was full of laughs. One of the happiest people I've ever seen. So how does that relate to lay life? Yes, you have your goals in life, you have your aims, but make them reasonable aims. Don't expect to be the best lover in the whole of Singapore. You are not. Don't expect to be the richest or the most beautiful woman in Singapore. You are not. Don't expect to be the richest person. There's only one person to be the richest person. It's a waste of time. So keep your goals within something you can manage, something you can realize. Even as a monk many years ago, I thought, what a wonderful thing it will be to help the world. And how stupid that is, to help the world. Instead, I changed my goal. Can I just help one person? Save one person's life. And that became my aim, my goal, as a compassionate monk. And of course, when the first person came to me and said, Ajahn Brahm, thank you so much. Because of your teaching, I never committed suicide. You literally did save my life. I said, I've achieved my goal. Now I go to the second goal, the next person. So I keep my goals within something I can reach, just to help one person, that's all. And I can always do that. And over my life, I can honestly say I've helped many, many people. But if I started my next life, say I help 1,000 people, I'd have got frustrated, burnt out, and given up. So with your goals, make small goals, manageable goals, which you can achieve. Once you've achieved that, then go to the next goal. One by one. Not aiming for the world and getting frustrated and disappointment when you fail.
Thank you, Ajahn. So we shall not aim to answer all the questions, but we can answer the next question.
There's just one question at a time, please. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, this question has got three parts. The first part, actually, I think you've kind of answered it. It says, how to maintain happiness and keep worries at bay permanently. Then there's a second question of like how to avoid external factors like people, matters that from affecting one's mood.
Oh, first of all, the worry. What are you worrying about? If worry is looking at the future with a negative fault-finding mind, look at all the things which might go wrong in life. Instead of looking at the future with a negative mind, look at the future with a positive mind. All the things which might go right in life. The difference between worry and being happy. I said this, I think the last talk I was with a few weeks ago, but I was just reminding it to Angie earlier. This is the sayings, the wisdom of Snoopy from the Peanuts cartoon. Negativity and worry. One day you will die. That's worry. The positive hope mind is most days you will not die. That's the difference between
between people who worry and people who live their life with happiness. And how do we deal with other people who, you know, who, what's it say? Something like that. Other people affect our happiness.
Yeah, how to avoid external factors like people that affect.
You can't avoid external factors, but what you can deal with it. Over in Sri Lanka, I was telling the monks that you are 120 monks and 30 nuns on a retreat over there I was teaching. So I tell the simile of the lotus. This is a lotus simile. You know, a lotus, symbol of Buddhism, is always fragrant because water falls on it and it just all falls off. So I said to the monks, look, if somebody urinates on you, and this filthy, smelly urine goes all over you, pretend to be a lotus. A lotus just, it all falls off, and you keep nothing of it, and afterwards you smell as fragrant as you did before. That's like somebody criticizes you, scolds you. You stupid monk, you idiot monk. That's like urinating on me. And afterwards, I keep nothing. I don't remember even what they said. And then somebody else comes up and pours Chanel number 5 over me. And I remember that that's like praising. Oh, what a wonderful monk you are. Oh, how wonderful it is that you come to Singapore. Can't you stay? We love you so much. You're the best monk in the whole world. That's like pouring Chanel number 5 over me. Just like a lotus. The Chanel number 5 just runs all off the lotus petals, and after all the Chanel number 5 has dripped off, the lotus just smells the same as before, just like a lotus, not like a young girl going to a nightclub. That's how you deal with praise or with blame. Imagine you're a lotus, nothing sticks. So people praise you, they blame you. Doesn't matter. It's what you think of yourself is important. So praise yourselves. And as I mentioned this very often, so I'm going to mention it once again here. It saves a lot of questions. Anybody who's got low self-esteem, who thinks they're hopeless, they're useless, and as a result gets into addiction or other self-harming behavior, please get the piece of paper out. Big sheet of paper, line down the middle, vertical line, your name on the top, and on the left-hand side of the paper, all the things which are wrong with you, the terrible things you've done, all your mistakes and faults, write them down on the left-hand side of the piece of paper, why you feel that you're no good. And once you've finished, if you need any help, ask your partner, they can help. Well, all the bad things about you. And then on the right-hand side of the sheet of paper, write all the good stuff about you. I remember doing this to a fellow. He said, there's nothing good about me at all. I'm hopeless, I'm terrible, I'm a waste of time, I'm a blight, a scar on humanity, or something like that. I said, well, you know, what have you done today? Nothing, nothing good at all. I said, you got a cat, haven't you? Yes. Did you feed the cat this morning? Yes. Put that down. Fed the cat. That's a nice, kind, compassionate thing. And so once he got the first thing out, the second thing came very quickly, then the third thing. He filled up that right-hand part of the piece of paper with all his kind, compassionate, good qualities, which when he was focusing on the fault, he just could not see. When I focused on the two bad bricks, I couldn't see the good bricks. When you focus on the reason why that you think you're a hopeless person, it's just like looking at the two bad bricks. The right-hand side, fill it out with all your good qualities. And get the scissors, cut it down the middle, photocopy the right-hand side, laminate it, put it in your office, by your bedroom, in your kitchen, in your toilet, you know, in your wallet, everywhere you can find. The left-hand side, all your terrible qualities, in the trash can. Throw it away. And honestly, this is very simple psychology, and it works very powerfully. You're always reminded of your good qualities, your good qualities, your good qualities. And that means you realize you're not a hopeless person after all. In fact, you're a wonderful, beautiful person. When you see those good qualities, it does not make you egotistical and proud. It gives you the sense of having a really big heart, not a big head, and you want to do more of those good qualities again. They inspire you. But I can do such wonderful work. I can be so kind. I can feed the cat every morning. That helps you feed the cat 2 times a day, 3 times a day. So please, anyone who is down, depressed, low self-esteem, very simple sheet of paper, right-hand side, your good qualities, left-hand side, just trash can, and then keep them in your wallet everywhere you can.
You, John. There's a question follow-up of how to end bad karma.
How to end bad karma? Just let it go. It's the past. Those shopping bags in the meditation, you put down the shopping bag of the past, your bad karma, what you did, and then leave it there and walk away. The security will think it's a bomb and take it away after themselves. So you don't have to deal with it at all. They'll just blow it up. I used to have arguments with psychologists. Can you really let go of the past or do you have to deal with it all? And after much arguments and much explanation, they came to agree with me. You can't let go of the past totally. It's just like you're on a little rowing boat and you're pulling this huge barge of old karma with you. And it's just so hard to go through life with all these bad memories, this bad karma, like you're towing this huge heavy weight behind you. Until you realize you can let it go. You don't have to keep worrying about it. And once you realize that, you let it go. And you go forward in your life with no baggage from the past. Free, happy, positive, and much more successful. One of my friends, he grew up in Sydney by the waterfront. He had a best friend, maybe 6, 7 years of age, playing on a pier. For a joke, he pushed his best friend into the water. His best friend drowned. He killed him. His best friend's family lived the next door. He had to face the parents of his dead best friend every day for weeks after the funeral. He felt terrible about that. And in fact, he didn't do well at school, didn't do well in life for years, he told me. Always, you know, low grades, no girlfriends, really a lot of problems. Until he said, and he said this, just one day, like waking up in the morning, he realized he didn't need to punish himself anymore. Just as simple as that. The parents of the deceased child, his own parents, said, look, you're a 6, 7-year-old kid. You know, you can't blame anyone for that. It was just a joke, just kids playing. It was just an unfortunate accident. But don't take responsibility. For years he took responsibility until he realized he didn't need to anymore. And then he actually got a job in a famous movie afterwards and had quite a successful life. But not until he realized he could totally let go of the bad karma. You don't need to keep focusing on it, to keep remembering it. For goodness sake, let it go.
You are, John. The next question is quite specific to Asians. And the question goes, Asians are conditioned to be afraid of ghosts, especially when we are alone at nights or in dark rooms. How do we befriend or let go of this stigma? Perhaps there are a lot of good spirits.
There's some very good spirits. I was talking at lunchtime today. One of the things which I am doing, I'm always getting roped into doing other projects, you know, that every year now I'm going over to UK because I'm trying to start a monastery for women in London. It's called the Anukampa Bhikkhuni Project. And I think I did tell you last time that, you know, we're raising money for this. We did actually find a property for it. an absolutely amazing property for a monastery. Central London is only about 5 minutes from Victoria Station. Ample parking, beautiful gardens, and plenty of room there for a retreat. You know, anyone from the Buddhist Fellowship or Bodhinyana can go there and do retreats in the centre of London. Our only problem was the owner never wanted to sell. It was Buckingham Palace. And the owner, Queen Elizabeth, she's got plenty of properties. She's got a palace in Windsor and Sandringham and goodness knows where else. And we only wanted one of her properties. And anyway, she's going, getting old now. It's time for her to downsize, move into old people's home. You know, like... But no, we found another property. That was only a joke. This is serious. Found another property 2 hours outside of London. You know, within our budget, because we hadn't got much money yet. Absolutely perfect, except for one thing. It was one of the most well-known haunted houses in UK. That's why it was going so cheap, and no one would buy it. And so we really thought, should we buy this as a monastery for women? You know, a haunted house. Cheap, nice. The problem was that, so nice, we don't mind living with ghosts. But the problem was that no people would go there to meditate, listen to a Dhamma, or even offer any food. We'd starve. But so we decided not to buy that one. But how not to be scared? Ghosts are really nice. And cool and kind. Oh, one of the other ghost stories, I told many ghost stories, I don't think I've told this before. This is again an old man, old woman in an old people's home, a very nice old people's home. And, you know, his wife had died, her husband had died a long time ago, so they became friends. You know, they obviously never get married or have sex or whatever, but they did lots of stuff together. You know, there's real good companionship in the later years of their life. And so they would have lunch together and maybe go out for coffee together. They'd talk with each other. And she always remembered him telling her that most of his family lived in UK. And he had one sister who was the closest relation to her, to him. But then that a few days later he died. And they couldn't find any relations, any sort of nearest relation in their records. So they didn't know what to do. And so what happened, a couple of nights later, in her room, asleep, she said she felt somebody stroke her cheek. And she was terrified. Some burglar or some guy to rape her or do some damage was in her room. So she woke up immediately and turned on the light, and the door was locked, the windows was locked, there's no way any human being could get in that room. But then as she was looking, now next to her bed, now an old-fashioned woman, she had a tissue paper folded in four. And then with all the doors and windows locked, a breeze came and blew that tissue paper from the table onto the floor, which was, you know, impossible. But she picked up that tissue paper, and on the tissue paper were some numbers. She rang that number on the telephone, and a woman in England answered, and she knew exactly what had happened. She said, "I'm sorry to tell you, but, you know, your brother here in Australia, in Perth, has just died." So how did you have my number? Oh, he gave it to me. Never said they gave it to her after he died. And it was a real number. So ghosts can be very, very helpful. Or the Singapore ghost story. Here we go. The Singapore General Hospital, SGH. I got a call one evening. It was a Sri Lankan disciple had brought her elderly sister over to Singapore for treatment. She had very bad cancer. And brought her over here for, you know, the best possible treatment. You know, your family members, you spend anything to get them better again. But unfortunately, the treatment wasn't being effective. Looked like she was dying, only a few days to live. And her sister said, "We really want her to talk to you. Can you please talk to my sister? She's dying." So on the telephone, I spent, you know, the next 3 days, 3 evenings, talking with her, encouraging her, counseling her on how to deal with her impending death. The fourth night, she never called. She died that night. The fifth night, her sister called and said, "Thank you that my sister died last night." I said, "Yes, I knew that. That's why you never called." "Yes, but I want to tell you something very strange which had happened. About 12 hours after she died, my sister sent me an email saying, please thank you, and thank you especially to Ajahn Brahm." 12 hours after death, and she'd been paralyzed. She could speak, but she couldn't move her arms. I never had any access to a computer. But 12 hours after she was dead, she managed to send an email. I never realized I had internet down there. Wi-Fi. They do, apparently, the ghost realm. That's why I never understood what Gmail meant. Ghost mail. That's what Gmail means. I also thought it was Google, but it wasn't. It's ghost mail.
Thank you, Ajahn. The next question is about non-humans. The question is, like, do all dogs go to heaven?
This is the dog ghost story. This happened just about 3 months ago in Perth. One of my Thai disciples, his best friend, had a dog. Dog had cancer. Best treatment, eventually had to take the dog to go to the vet to be put down, to be killed, euthanized. So they gave the dog the injection, and this guy held it in his hands, in his arms, while the dog died. Apparently, about 6 days later, this man got up early to go to work as usual, opened the front door of his house, and right outside the house, as soon as he opened the door, there was a dog. Looked exactly like the dog who had died 6 days ago. Exactly the same. Couldn't tell the difference. And this dog ran past, you know, the former owner and went to every corner of that house where the dog used to sit and lie down and sleep. Just lay down for a few seconds and then get up. Then he went to the dripping tap where the dog would always take a drink. And then he went upstairs to the bedroom where this man's wife was still sleeping or half asleep. And the dog had got into this habit, you know, before going to work with its owner, to actually putting his head up and kissing the wife. And the wife would always kiss her dog. And the wife was half asleep and didn't realize that the dog had died a week ago. So she kissed it. And then the dog ran downstairs, went out of the door and tried to get into the car to go to work, like it usually did do with its master. But that was too much for this guy. He said, "No, go. You're dead." And so the dog ran away in the opposite direction, never saw the dog again. Exactly the same as the owner's dog. And if you've owned a dog, you know the difference between your dog and other people's dogs. You know, other people may think it looks the same, but no, you know that's your dog. That was his dog. Came back again 6 days after dying, and he held him in his arms. He was dead. And came back to visit the house one last time, and even to say one last kiss to his master's wife. So in the early morning, be careful what you kiss.
Thank you, Ajahn. Well, I think in the interest of time, maybe let's do the last question.
Okay, yeah. People have got to go for their dinner.
Yeah. So the question is, "Hi, Ajahn. You talked about people as trees. I am a tall, straight tree. Quite boring, plain vanilla. How do I get a more interesting life?"
Ah. Because you're plain and boring. There's not many other trees like that in Singapore. So you're probably the most beautiful and wonderful, unique. The only person in Singapore who's never done anything naughty. The only person who's straight. There's no other tree like you in the whole forest. Straight and gorgeous and beautiful. No. The point was that every tree is welcome. Every tree is valued for who they are. Somebody asked me in Sri Lanka, so the monks who come to ordain in my monastery, do they have to be highly educated? And I say, no. Do they have to have skills? No. Basically, any person can become a monk. Anyone can become a nun. Because I've found that they each have their own little skills. And they all fit in somehow or other. So mention, we have one monk who's a clinical schizophrenic. Wonderful monk. He's fit in very easily. He belongs. He's a great monk. There's another who can never do any chanting. When he tries to do the chanting, we have to help him because he just can't chant it because he had a bad education. He's brilliant when it comes to fixing the cars and vehicles. So everyone is welcome. And that's one of the things in a monastery, at least you can get that to be a Buddhist place where everyone feels they have something to offer. Every tree belongs. Every human being is a part of things. And so whenever you see there's a guy and you haven't got any partner yet, what a beautiful person that is. Just, simple, kind. Just, probably there's some things inside of him he hasn't seen himself yet, which, sort of a nice partner will bring out and just encourage. Because that's one of the advantages in having a marriage, that sometimes your wife sees things in you which you never believe were there. Brings them out, the good qualities. Or a good friend can do that. See, just amazing things you never expected to see yourself. But they're there, and they bring them out. And they come up to the surface, and you realize that you're much more than a boring tree. I've never seen a boring tree in the forest, ever. They're all interesting. I've never seen a person I can never love and be kind to. Even in prisons. Always see something you can respect in somebody. If you can do that too, you'll have a very happy life. Anytime.
Thank you very much, Ajahn Mun. So, shall we all say like three sadhus? And for those who are new, that means like rejoice. It's in the Pali language.
It means awesome.
Awesome. Means awesome, according to Ajahn. So, you can say sadhu or awesome if you want. So, okay.
Sadhu.
Sadhu.
Before you leave, I have a few announcements that I promised Angie I'll make, so I'll make them right now. Like she mentioned earlier, there is the next time that Ajahn Brahm is coming is on the 23rd of February for a talk on life and death. And this will actually be limited seats. There are 250 seats in the Rinsu Multipurpose Hall. So please register on Eventbrite. This is on the 23rd of February. The other thing to share with everyone is the Ajahn Brahm Executive Retreat. This will be in the Phuket Marriott from the 27th of May to 5th of June. You can find more details on the Bodhinirvana Singapore Facebook page. The third thing is actually on the Buddhist Fellowship Taiwan Dharma Tour, which you mentioned.